This is VSiN Prime Time. Live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are off and running on a Thursday evening alongside Matt Eumanns. I'm Tim Murray. We're live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Game one of the NBA Finals tonight as the Oklahoma City Thunder right now 9.5 or 10 point favorites against the Indiana Pacers. Total sits at 230, Mr. Eumanns. But before we get to that, a final just coming across and a big one at Chavez Ravine as the Dodgers come back to beat the New York Mets, a final of 6-5. So quite the stretch there for the Dodgers at home. Yankees over the weekend, four game set with the Mets. It's a split, and three runs in the bottom of the eighth get it done for the Dodgers as they come back to win 6-5 this afternoon. Dodgers now up to 38-25. Mets dropped to 39-24.
Yeah, it was one of those games today where you kind of wanted to back the Mets starter because you had the edge there with David Peterson, the lefty, but I didn't trust the Mets as a whole today, and they blew the game, obviously, and Dodgers come back and win and get the split. And Dodgers, that puts them at, 4-3 against the Mets and the Yankees on that seven-game homestand against New York team. So Dodgers got what they needed with the comeback win today, and we're looking forward to a great game tonight. I'm not that surprised this number's got up to 10 with OKC a 10-point favorite over Indiana in game one of the NBA Finals. The total has come down a tick. It peaked at 231.5, down to 230 or 230.5. But I really felt like the more of the action is going to be on the favorite. And the total, you're probably going to get two-way action. This trend about game one finals underdogs has got to scare you away if you like the Pacers. Last 20 years, underdogs in game one of the finals, 2-18 straight up, 3-17 against the spread. Underdogs of 5 points or more, 0-12 straight up, 1-11 against the spread. You say, well, that has no bearing on tonight's game. This is a totally different case. Well, that's true. But that type of history has got to scare you a little bit with the trends here. And I like the Pacers. I think they're going to be live in this series. I don't really like the Pacers tonight.
Yeah, and we had Evan Abrams on earlier this week, and he said he had to double-check the numbers because it was just it's so wild to look at the difference of those spots. So, yeah, 2-18 straight up, 3-17 ATS mass. The last two underdogs to win game one still ended up losing the series, the 2022 Celtics against the Warriors. I had the Celtics in that series. That was a good start until it wasn't. And then the 2013 Spurs won game one against the Heat. The only time the dog won game one and went on to win the series, a team that you'll hear quite often, if the Pacers are able to do it, those 0-4 Detroit Pistons, who ultimately won that series in five games.
Remember that series well. In the early 2000s, there are a couple series that kind of jump out in your memory. One is in 2000, Pacers and Lakers. Mm-hmm. And that was obviously the dominant Lakers team with Kobe and Shaq, and they're rising up and they're headed into their prime. And the Pacers took the Lakers six games. Obviously, L.A. won the series. In 2004, Lakers had a lot of dysfunction within that team, big favorites. And they get beat by Detroit. I believe that was in five games, right? The Pistons won that
one in five. Yep.
And that was felt like kind of the end of the Kobe, Shaq, Phil Jackson dance when Lakers lost to Detroit. But again, going back 20 years, that's just that's the type of trend you got to pay a little bit of attention to.
Yeah, no doubt about
20
it.
20 years in game one of the NBA Finals, underdogs 2-18 straight up.
Yeah. Wow. It is a pretty staggering number, and once again, today on the show, we'll have Zach Cohen join us coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll get his favorite bets for tonight and the NBA Finals. We'll talk some NBA props later on this hour. Derek Stevens, owner of Circa and Circa Sports, he will join us in studio in the 8 o'clock Eastern hour. We'll be joined by the crew. It'll feel like a football Thursday. Wilbo and Banksy will join us. Maybe we'll get some thoughts from Banksy on last night there in game one of the Stanley Cup final, overtime win for the Edmonton Oilers. But Matt, as we continue to get people ready for tip-off between the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder, we got a fancy graphic. So let's get to that because it is, of course, our game of the night.
The lights are on and the stakes are high. It's the primetime game of the night.
Yes, indeed.
What is this, Tim?
It's the game of the night, man.
This is the game of the night.
That's true.
It's got to be.
Yeah, it is. Our game of the night. I mean, I was going to do Cubs and Nationals, but I decided.
Well, it started right before the show.
Yeah, of course. We couldn't make that happen. Game one, the NBA Finals tonight, as we have the Indiana Pacers right now at, depending on what book you look at, the Westgate Superbook and DraftKings now out to 10. Circa sits at a juiced 9.5, total of 230. And Matt, you and I get the fortune to sit here in studio, have the game on the main screen, and keep our eyes on this game and see if there's a live betting opportunity, which we have done so quite a bit throughout the postseason. But as we look at our betting splits over at VSiN.com, which you can certainly access if you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, 62% of the bets at DraftKings, believe it or not, Matt, on the dog. So there's some interest in the Indiana Pacers from the betting public, but 52% of the handle on the Oklahoma City Thunder, 60% of bets, 69% of handle on the over for tonight, and that was courtesy of our betting splits over at DraftKings.
I'm going to read you a text I received today, and I would consider this person to be the basic public bettor, okay? Not somebody's opinion that I tremendously respect or anything like that.
Going to read my texts on the air? That's kind of mean.
He is knowledgeable about sports, but not the sharpest better. And this is what he sent me a text today about the Indiana-OKC game one. I thought, this is a classic. I got to read this on the air. First of all, his first paragraph, he just shreds all the OKC stars like they're terrible players. So I'm going to skip past
that. Is this Chris Massaro?
It is not. And then he goes on to say, quote, Pacers have a ton of scoring, and to be getting 9.5 points to me is crazy. I think Indiana wins the series, but that's just my opinion. And he goes on to say, I'm not an OKC believer. They should have lost to Denver. And he rips the star players again and says, finishes up with this, to me, it's a coin flip series. So, end quote. I'm going to say that he's not going to get a job anytime soon working as an odds maker or a bookmaker. It's not a coin flip series.
It is not a coin flip series. It is one of the more lopsided series prices we've had in NBA history, and we'll see if it is for good reason. Look, I mentioned it on the weekend show, Matt. I did take a little OKC minus 2.5 games. Do I love the bet? No, I don't. But I think that Indiana is going to struggle quite a bit on the road in this series, and the thing that has me most concerned from Indiana's standpoint is their best player, Tyrese Haliburton. They're going to have answers for him. They're going to throw a wave of different defenders at him like they did to Anthony Edwards. So I do think, though, from a spread standpoint, and I tend to agree with you, Matt, tonight might not be the night. But I do think, let's say tonight is a blowout. Let's say Oklahoma City wins comfortably tonight. I think there's going to be opportunities to look at this Pacers team in Game 2, mm-hmm. Game 3 back in Indianapolis. As we've seen, this Oklahoma City team, 0-7 ATS on the road. Tonight, they're, of course, at home, and they've had a lot of success this postseason here at home. But I think Oklahoma City, I don't know if this is fair because the Pacers are better, but I feel like this series might be a little bit comparable to last year's Eastern Conference Finals, where all the games except Game 2 were competitive, but the Celtics found a way to win all of those games, one in a sweep. Mm-hmm. I don't know if OKC's going to sweep this series, Matt. I would be stunned if OKC does not hoist the Larry O'Brien. And I do think because they get games 1, 2, and 5 at home, that's why ultimately I played the minus 2.5 games.
Yeah, I think the Pacers, I'm going to say the Pacers got a decent chance to extend this series. Okay. And I'm a 3-point shooting is a big part of it. They're going to have to get hot from 3 in 2 or 3 games. But the Pacers have the top 3-point shooting team in the playoffs at 40%. OKC, believe it or not, only shoots 33.6%. From 3 in the playoffs. Pacers are the second best offensive efficiency team in the playoffs, 117.7 points per 100 possessions. Now you're going to say they're not going to get all these easy looks and fast break opportunities they got in the through on the road through the Eastern Conference, which is true. They're not going to get as many open looks. Hey, the Knicks turned the ball over repeatedly, and the Pacers had fast break after fast break, piled up points after turnover off turnovers. That's not going to happen against OKC. But Rick Carlisle, who I think gives the Pacers a significant coaching edge here, is going to have his team prepared well to attack this OKC defense. And that's something you also figure out throughout the series. You make adjustments throughout the series. And I like Carlisle's ability to do that a little bit better because he's been there, he's done it, he's won it, he's seen everything. So that's why I think the Pacers have a chance to drag this series out. The three-point shooting, your coaching edge, I don't necessarily like him tonight. See, tonight you're guessing a little bit if you're saying, wow, this is a big number. I'm going to take 9.5 or 10 with the Pacers. But a lot of times the number doesn't matter. Could be a blowout tonight. You're going to hear, if it is a blowout, you're going to hear a lot of OKC sweep talk, just like you did in previous rounds. I bet Thunder in 6 at plus 450, Thunder in 7 at 5-1 odds, banking on the Pacers' ability to get this past five games. Hopefully that's what happens, but Pacers are deep. Don't forget about that.
Oh, yeah.
That's one reason they got past the Knicks. Tom Thibodeau got fired as Knicks coach, but that wasn't necessarily his fault. He didn't have much of a bench to go to. The Pacers have a deep bench. They have a bunch of shooters. So I do think they're live, at least in terms of making this a serious series.
Last time these two teams played late in the regular season, during the midst of a pretty nice Pacers run, the Thunder were able to get that one rather comfortably, 132-111 back on March 29th. Since January 1st, these are the two best teams straight up in the NBA going head-to-head, and it starts tonight, 8:30 Eastern. It will be tipped between the Thunder and the Pacers. Pacers right now catching 9.5 or 10. Total sits at 2:30. A lot of preview for you as we get ready for tip-off, including up next, Zachary Cohen joins us to give us his best bets for tonight. It is VSiN Primetime.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is VSiN Primetime here on this Thursday evening, the night of Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Last night, of course, the Oilers in overtime came back to beat the Florida Panthers to take a 1-0 series lead. Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final is tomorrow night. That's Matt Eumanns. I'm Tim Murray. We've got Guardians and Yankees on our screen here as just two baseball games. A lot of day games today, Matt. Only two baseball games going on right now. The Cubs up 3-0 on the Nationals, and the Guardians and Yankees just underway at Yankee Stadium. All right, let's get to our progressive guest line and welcome in Zachary Cohen, who joins us courtesy of that progressive guest line. You can follow him on social media. He's at Betting on X. He's our senior editor of vsin.com. Let's look side and total here first. Right now, we've seen a little bit of money come in on Oklahoma City, Zach. Some tens out there, 9.5 at a number of other shops. 230 is the total. Anything for you on side or total tonight in game one?
Yeah, I would grab the 10 points. I know that we all think Oklahoma City is a better team than Indiana. I just don't really think the margin's going to be that big. I know that Indiana has, I guess, more question marks defensively. Oklahoma City has been, you know, a historically great defensive team throughout the regular season. They're just going to have to consistently make shots in order to put away this Pacers team with the way that we know Indiana can play offense. And I do kind of think that Rick Carlisle is an advantage over Mark Daigneault, at least early in a playoff series where, you know, we've seen him win in NBA Finals before, both as a player and as a coach, and has a really good history of game ones, both with this Pacers team and before getting to Indiana. He's 3-0 in game ones, both straight up and against the spread this year. Had a good record before that, before he got to Indiana. I just think that giving him a lot of time to prepare is a recipe for success for the Pacers. And all year long, that's been the case. When they've had 3-plus days of rest this season, they're 7-1, both straight up and against the spread.
Zach, I'm with you. I've been talking about the coaching edge I think the Pacers have here with Rick Carlisle, too. So how do you bet the series? Right now it's circa OKC up to minus 750. How do you bet a series when you have a minus 750 favorite? If you think, well, the Pacers can make this a serious series, they can drag it out, but OKC is going to win it. Did you bet OKC to win in 6 games and 7 games? Did you bet over 5.5? What approach did you take here?
I just took the over 5.5. You nailed it. I got plus 115 on that. I think the Thunder are going to win this series. They're heavy favorites for a reason. I do think that they are the much better basketball team. I just think that there are still some question marks when you talk about the number two and number three on this Oklahoma City team. That's Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren. Both of them, you know, kind of answered a lot of questions throughout this postseason already. I thought both of them really stepped up against Minnesota. Both of them had some big games against Denver. But it's not a night-to-night consistency with those guys. I think that SGA is really the only person on the Thunder that you know is going to show up every single game of a series. So I think there's going to be a game where, you know, Oklahoma City struggles to shoot the ball. That's maybe a win for Indiana, and a game where Indiana just gets scorching hot, because this has been the best three-point shooting team throughout the entire postseason. And this Oklahoma City team, they are great defensively. They do a good job of contesting three-point shots, but they also let up a lot of them, and they let up a lot of them from the corners. So I think that this Pacers team is going to have a game where they shoot really well, especially at home. Like, I'd be shocked if they don't win game three or game four. And I think they have a chance of winning both those games. I also think, you know, there is a chance they steal game one. I think this game tonight is going to be their best chance of winning a road game for the entire series.
You know, we were talking about that game one NBA finals. You go back 20 years, underdogs 2-18 straight up, 3-17 against the spread. Underdogs of more than 5 points, 0-12 and 1-11. Obviously, you could say, well, that doesn't apply to this game. Who cares? Does a trend like that bother you at all when you like the dog tonight?
As a believer in trends, like, it does definitely bother me, but I don't want to throw it out completely. But like I said, like, this Oklahoma City team is very inexperienced. They are going to be experiencing all of this for the first time. So it's not like they're going to get out there and just be completely comfortable. And it's a team that has struggled to shoot the three ball all throughout this postseason. So I just kind of think the Pacers are going to play a little zone, try to force them to make shots. And I do wonder if nerves kind of get to Oklahoma City early in the series. I mean, if Minnesota took a better care of the ball in that last series, they might have won both games one and game two. They came off to a really hot start in game one of that series last series. Then they just started coughing up the ball against a Thunder team that has been the best in the league throughout the postseason in turnover rate for opponents. Like, they do a great job of just getting up in your grill, you know, playing passing lanes. They do all of that very well. But the Pacers are not the Timberwolves. They take care of the basketball. They were third in the regular season in turnover rate, in terms of lowest turnover rate. And the same thing applied to the postseason, third as well.
Once again, Zachary Cohen joining us here, senior editor for vsin.com. He's got a column up breaking down the French Open women's title, which will be this weekend. We'll get to that a little bit later here. But we're sitting at a total of 230, 230 and a half at DraftKings. I know you've got a bet on Indiana plus the points. No official play on the total, but I am curious, when you look at this total, is there any correlation that you see? When you look back in the Knicks series, the games that Indiana won, the game went over, went 3-1 to the over, and based off of the closing number, it was 4-0 to the over there. So any feel on the total here sitting at 230?
I think that Indiana would prefer to play fast, so I do think that they're going to try to up the tempo, and I don't really think Oklahoma City is going to have a problem kind of getting into a track meet with them. I'm not playing the total, though, because I do think that we saw in that Knicks series, I know that you said they went over when the Pacers won, but I did think that there was more of a willingness from Indiana to execute in the half court, and I thought there was a lot of growth from Tyrese Haliburton just kind of as a half court initiator. So I think that we're going to have to see how this plays out in game one. It's definitely a type of series where we're going to have to see how things play out, because we just have not seen these teams play each other a lot. We saw them play twice in the regular season, but in one of those games, Chet Holmgren didn't play. It's going to be interesting to watch. I just can't get involved in the total here.
All right, Zach Cohen, vsin.com. How about player props? You get involved with many of those tonight with SGA or Tyrese Haliburton or any players under the radar?
I went Andrew Nembhard over 15.5 points and assists. If you look at the regular season, one of the constants is that he did play well against OKC. He averaged 19.5 points per game and 7.5 assists a game in those two games. And one of the things that really did stick out when watching those games is that, you know, they were very, very willing to let Nembhard bring the ball up and kind of move Haliburton off the ball a little bit, just to allow him to rest and just avoid kind of having Alex Caruso or Lu Dort just right up in his grill. I think that we're going to see a lot of that right away, with just Nembhard getting the chance to run the show a little bit. Sometimes he's just going to hand the ball off to Haliburton, let Haliburton run the offense on the half court. But Nembhard is a point guard, so I do think they're going to be completely fine with him running some early offense as well. So I keep an eye on Nembhard as both a scorer and a playmaker, and I do think that a 15.5 is a really low number.
All right, Zach Cohen, vsin.com. Tim Murray can't wait to talk tennis. So, Tim, let me volley it back to you.
Did you want? I didn't know if you wanted to break it down. No?
No, we're going to let Zach break it down.
All right, let's get to it. You've got a column up right now. Let's start with the final, which is on Saturday. We've got Sabalenka versus Coco Gauff. Right now, Gauff anywhere from plus 170 to plus 180 dog. Does the American have a shot to bring home the French Open crown on Saturday morning?
I think she has a real shot. This was my pick before the tournament, was Gauff to win it, and I do think that playing at Roland Garros, where the courts are slower than they were in Madrid when these two met in a final a couple of weeks ago, is really going to help Gauff. It's going to make things just much difficult on Sabalenka, who's a pure power player, wants to hit the ball by you. It's very difficult to do it on this higher bouncing clay, and if they do end up playing indoors because of the rain, things slow down even more. So I just think that Gauff's defense is really going to get to Sabalenka, and I also just kind of think it seems a little easy to back Sabalenka at minus 190 after watching her kind of take care of business against Iga the way she did today. I think that everyone's going to be on Sabalenka in this match. We kind of already see that in the betting splits at VSiN.com. I think that the contrarian route here is also the right route when you look at on-court matchup, where Gauff has been the better player between these two when playing in slower conditions. And I do think that Gauff is going to have the crowd. I think the crowd, they were for Boisson last match. That's a French woman, but they're like an underdog. They're going to root for Gauff here.
All right, let's get to the men's semis tomorrow. Once again, check it out, vsin.com. I would say the later match is the more appealing to most. Yatsinner versus Novak Djokovic, and Novak Djokovic finds himself around a plus 330 underdog. Can one of the greatest, maybe the greatest of all time, be a live dog tomorrow against Jannik Sinner?
I'm not taking him. I have Djokovic to win the tournament at 10-1. Also have Sinner to win the tournament at plus 250, so I'll be in good shape either way. I did take the over 3.5 sets, though, because I do think Djokovic is a little bit more live than people think. I just love the way that Djokovic mixed in drop shots against Alexander Zverev last match. He really tested the German's legs, and that ended up kind of opening up the court for him. That's going to be there against Sinner. Sinner is a very good mover and has, you know, answered a lot of questions about his fitness over the last 2 years, but he has looked a little bit tired throughout this tournament, which I think is only natural for a guy that was off for 3 months. I know he was working, you know, on his conditioning. He definitely added some muscle while he was suspended, but I do think he was kind of gasping for air when playing a lot of drop shots last match against Alexander Bublik. I think Djokovic is going to hit him better and do more when he does get Sinner at the net. So I think it's going to be a closer match than people think. I think Djokovic is somewhat live. Having said that, Sinner is a big favorite. I like minus 450. He should win the match. I just think it's going to be 4 or 5 sets.
At Betting on X is where you can follow Zach there. And, of course, read all his work over at vsin.com. Best of luck with your bet, Zach.
Thanks, guys.
I was going to ask your rebuttal, but we're up against the break.
We're out of time.
Yeah,
it's after the break.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
About an hour away from tip-off, game one of the NBA Finals tonight in Oklahoma City. The Thunder, a 10 or 9.5-point dog, depending on where you look. 9.5 here at Circa, 10 at DraftKings, handful of other spots in that realm. 230 is your total. We'll talk some props coming up in less than 15 minutes. Derek Stevens, owner and CEO of Circa and Circa Sports. He'll jump in studio. Who do you think the house will be cheering for this evening? But Matt, of course, we get big old news that we were all anticipating, but it comes out, the official nature of it. Aaron Rodgers is going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. What a shock. But yes, the Pittsburgh Steelers finally have agreed to a deal with Aaron Rodgers, and he will, according to...
They've agreed to this deal a while ago, by the way.
Multiple reports out there, all confirming it, and he intends to be at minicamp starting next week. So Aaron Rodgers, now a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Matt.
Well, officially, and we expected this was going to happen. What I heard several weeks ago was the Steelers and Rodgers had agreed on a deal. It's just a matter of... it was not... if it was when. Mm-hmm. When was Rodgers going to report to camp? He had some personal issues going on. And now is the time. With minicamp coming up next week, not a big surprise. You had a lot of people in the media freaking out about How can the Steelers let Rodgers hold them hostage and drag this thing out throughout the summer? You know, I just checked the schedule, Tim. The Steelers don't play an actual game for 3 more months.
That is correct.
Right?
Confirmed.
So what's the rush to get Rodgers into camp in the middle of May, early May, late May? Who cares? Get him in for minicamp in early June, and that's what's happening. Believe it or not, many of the media members were overreacting, and there was no reason to do it. Now, I'm not making excuses for Rodgers and his diva act. I think we're all tired of it. He brings a lot of baggage with him, right, when he comes to Pittsburgh. But there was no reason to get upset about Rodgers not being in Pittsburgh in May. He had met with Mike Tomlin. He had met with the Steelers. They had an agreement in principle. He was going to be there. So no surprise it's going to happen. I mean, if you've been handicapping the Steelers offseason, looking at division odds, win totals, futures, you were doing so knowing 90-some percent that Aaron Rodgers is going to be the quarterback for the Steelers. So the news finally comes down. It's official today. I think the next thing as a handicapper you have to evaluate is how much better, if at all, is Aaron Rodgers than Mason Rudolph, right? Because there are plenty of numbers out there. Warren Sharp broke some down.
Oh, yeah.
I looked at Warren Sharp's Twitter feed today, and plenty of numbers out there show that Mason Rudolph's actually been, in a lot of cases, more effective quarterback than Aaron Rodgers by the numbers. But Rodgers does bring, a year and a half removed from the Achilles surgery, almost 2 years removed from the Achilles surgery. There's a chance that he's going to play better than he did last year for the Jets. He's going to be a little bit more mobile. Physically, he's going to be more fit to step in there and be a quarterback who can win. Last year, I was very unimpressed with the way Rodgers played. He didn't deliver on third downs, fourth downs, key moments. He wasn't reading defenses like he used to. He didn't have any mobility in the pocket. We'll see if he's a different quarterback. This is his last shot, Tim. If he can't do it with the Steelers this season, he's done. So I think there is some urgency. You're getting Aaron Rodgers off a bit of a down season. You're getting Rodgers motivated, knowing that this is going to be the end of his career. If it's put up or shut up time. If you can't lead Pittsburgh to the playoffs, you're finished. So I kind of like this situation actually now with Rodgers going to Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin's not going to put up with all the nonsense. And don't forget, DK Metcalf was brought in as a number one wide receiver in the offseason. So the Steelers, even though you say George Pickens is out the door, DK Metcalf's in. Steelers had a very strong draft. I like a lot of what they did in the offseason. So I'm actually a little bit more optimistic than most about what this Pittsburgh Steelers team could do with Aaron Rodgers in there. And it's good that he's getting in now. He's going to be at mini camp next week. And all that talk about where's Rodgers, that's going to be forgotten by next week.
You know, one thing that I think is pretty intriguing about the Pittsburgh Steelers and their schedule this year, bringing in
opening with the Jets,
Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, you open against the Jets, which is pretty awesome. On the road there at MetLife, it won't be a primetime game. It'll be in that 1 o'clock Eastern window on CBS. But Matt, if you look at it, and this is one thing that Warren Sharp pointed out, is if you look at their schedule, it's not the most difficult schedule in the NFL based off of preseason win totals. That is actually owned by the New York Giants. However, and this is my point here on the Steelers, as the season goes on, Matt, it is rough. Starting in week 7, it is the most difficult schedule in the NFL. You go Bengals, Packers, Colts, which, see how that will all works out.
And Steelers the injuries handled the Bengals last season.
Chargers, you know? Bengals again at the Bears, Bills, Ravens, Dolphins, Lions, Browns, Ravens. So after and you get an early bye week too, right? You get the trip to Ireland week 4 to take on the Vikings. Then it's your bye week, the earliest bye week of anyone in the NFL. And then the real gauntlet starts. So if you're into maybe adjusted win totals, if they get off to a decent start, Matt, certainly could be an opportunity to maybe look under in season to see how this ultimately goes, because that schedule down the stretch is pretty challenging, no doubt.
That's very similar to last year's schedule.
Yeah.
Where the Steelers got off to a 7-2 start and then bombed down the stretch. And why'd they bomb? Because the schedule got a lot tougher down the stretch. And Tim, you're talking about the early part of the Steelers schedule being tougher. There's no question. Excuse me, the early
back end.
The back end being tougher and the early part being where the Steelers need to make their hay. You hate to have that bye week so early in week 5, too.
Yep.
The bye week, you want to be somewhere in the middle of the schedule. Not the earliest bye week possible, and that's week 5. But the Steelers, if you look at those, let's say, first 5 games, I think they've really got to get off to a 4-1 start, or at the least 3-2, to have any sort of chance to be a playoff team, because that schedule does get very, very difficult once you get into week 7 and beyond. But again, it's not the perfect plan. Pittsburgh has had they've been a little bit, Steelers have been discombobulated with their quarterback plan the last few years. They really haven't had one. It's kind of piecing things together. Well, let's bring in Russell Wilson, Justin Fields. We had Mason Rudolph for a while. Rudolph's back. Now we got Aaron Rodgers. I actually like Will Howard, the sixth-round draft pick out of Ohio State. I think he could be a really good backup or number three and eventually a backup, and who knows, a starter for the Steelers down the road. But for right now, I think this is the best plan Pittsburgh could put together for 2025, is Rodgers as your starter, Mason Rudolph as your backup, Will Howard as your number three, and that gives you a chance to compete to be a playoff team. But you've got to get off to a fast start. Like you said, you look at this schedule. If the Steelers go 4-1 in the first five, they're probably going to have a successful season. If they go 2-3, they're going to bomb, because that back end of the schedule is so much more difficult.
Yeah, when you look at some of the early point spreads that are out there, they're a 3-point favorite on the road week one against the Jets. After that, Matt, they're a home favorite in week two against the Seattle Seahawks. Very short home favorite. Slight road dog against New England. Slight dog in Ireland against against the Vikings. Then the bye week, and then they're a favorite against the Cleveland Browns. So as you alluded to, you look at the first five games of the season, 3-2 really at minimum if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers through those first five games, because then it gets pretty brutal.
I also think it's odd timing for Rodgers to announce this today, because we know he likes the spotlight to be on him. But this Rodgers news is overshadowed by the opening night of the Canadian Football League season. Everybody's talking about Ottawa and Saskatchewan. This game's going to tip off in an hour and 20 minutes in Saskatchewan. We had the Canadian kid, Ian Cameron, on the show this week previewing the CFL season, Tim. It gets going tonight. It kicks off Saskatchewan, a 3-point favorite. Total of 48.
Disrespect to the Red Blacks. Disrespect.
I will tell you, Ian Cameron has Saskatchewan minus 155 on the money line tonight. If you want to bet the CFL opener, that's what he's playing. And we have a full schedule this week in the CFL. Toronto and Montreal.
Ooh.
Heavyweight matchup on Friday night. And I'm actually fired up for the CFL. We thought about Ottawa, Saskatchewan being our game of the night.
We did.
But we decided to go with the Pacers Thunder instead.
We went back and forth and ultimately landed on game one of the NBA Finals, which once again will tip off a little bit after 8:30 Eastern. Matt, we've got a couple baseball games going on, so let's just update real quickly. There is no real update from Yankee Stadium, as it is scoreless right now between the Guardians and the New York Yankees. The Nationals and the Chicago Cubs going on right now in D.C., and all Cubs in this one. Two runs in the first, another in the second, and they're coming off of a 2-0 loss yesterday, the Cubs are, and right now they lead 3-0 in the bottom of the third inning. Hey, Matt, do you know that the final jewel of the Triple Crown is this weekend?
It's the Belmont Stakes.
Yes,
indeed. It's at Saratoga, and I know a couple of guys who are up there at Saratoga betting the horses today.
And there is no better time to bet on those horsies than right now with First Bet. New users can get a $200 sign-up bonus by using the promo code VSIN200. Whether you're a seasoned horse player or brand new to the sport, First Bet has all the tools to elevate your game. Download the app or go to firstbet.com/VSIN to sign up today. That's firstbet.com/VSIN and use the promo code VSIN200 for your $200 bonus. That's Matt Eumanns. I'm Tim Murray. Game one of the NBA Finals is tonight. Plenty of props to digest and bet on, and we'll discuss those for you next right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSIN Primetime on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Less than an hour away for tip-off, Oklahoma City and the Indiana Pacers. And as we look at the odds board this very moment, no real movement as we've been on the show here, Matt. But the Oklahoma City Thunder sit as a 9.5 now. 10 across the board, Matt. Mm-hmm. Over our shoulder, just went to 10. So the 9.5s are all gone. So we have seen steady movement towards Oklahoma City since the game one number came out. Once again, that's Matt Eumanns. I'm Tim Murray. Welcome to Bring On for the first time on this program, but he's been doing hits. Welcome to the VSiN team. It is Dan Karpuk. You can read his article over at vsin.com, taking a look at player props for tonight. So, Dan, let's jump right into it. You've got a couple of role players, and sometimes that's where you can find the value when it comes to NBA Finals games. So let's start with Cason Wallace of the Oklahoma City Thunder. What are we looking at for Cason Wallace tonight when it comes to his prop?
Inches here in this game, because when you just mentioned the 10-point spread, you're thinking these both of these benches have that consistency where they're gonna play, but also if this game gets out of hand a little bit, they're gonna get some extra minutes. So Cason Wallace over 12.5 points, rebounds, and assists. This is exactly the type of player I'm targeting here in game one. He's gonna get those reliable minutes off the bench. 12.5, like I said, despite the fact that he's cleared this number in 6 of his last 9 games, and he had 24 plus minutes in 4 of the 5 Western Conference Finals matchups against the Timberwolves here in the last round. He has the highest net rating, you know, geeks like me who are actually looking at this advanced stuff, highest net rating of any player in the playoffs, and the best individual defensive rating. So even edging out Alex Caruso, who's gotten all the love from, you know, all the broadcasts, but Wallace has quietly become one of the most impactful two-way pieces in this OKC rotation. And what kind of sets him apart here is that he's really already proven that he can really, really slow down some of these star guards. So he held Jamal Murray to just 40.7% shooting in their first round matchup. That's nearly identical to what Lu Dort did. And the big difference here between what Wallace and Lu Dort have been doing is that Wallace is actually making shots and doing something offensively. Indiana has allowed the third most bench points per game in this postseason at 39.4. And I think that there's a clear blowout potential here. There's a high total. Wallace is the type of guy who I really want to bet on to eclipse this 12.5 PRA line.
Check out his column on vsin.com. Dan, excellent job on the column. Very detailed. I read the whole thing. Plus, you got a few props I like tonight. I had my eyes on. So I want to talk about one, Alex Caruso. This is one I was looking at as well. As you mentioned, the only Thunder player with championship experience. What sort of prop? You going to look at points or points, rebounds, and assists for Caruso?
Points, rebounds, and assists. He's only 14.5. I'm going to go over that here. Like you mentioned, he has that veteran presence. He has that experience of actually winning a championship on a very young team here. And he's averaged 3.3 deflections, 1.8 steals in just 22.5 minutes. Yes, he's gotten away with some clear hacks here and there, but he's a big part of their defensive identity. I think he's going to spend a lot of time on the court defending both Pascal Siakam and Miles Turner, just like he did in previous series against Jokic, Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert. So his defensive abilities are going to give him the opportunity to stay on the floor here. And all he has to do is really just fill up a little bit in those three different categories. He's shooting a blistering 41.5% from three on 65 postseason attempts. That's the best mark on OKC. They've struggled from deep as a unit, as a whole team, but he's been really knocking down shots. And outside of Isaiah Joe, who isn't a really stable rotational guy, no other Thunder player shooting over 34% from three in these playoffs here. So he's cleared this 14.5 PRA mark in 4 of his last 6 games, trending upwards, I think, in both role and production. And once again, I want to target these bench guys here in what's going to be an up-tempo, most likely high-scoring game.
Once again, Dan Karpuk joining us here, courtesy of our Progressive guest line. Follow him on social media at Daniel Karpuk. That's K-A-R-P-U-C, and read his column over at vsin.com. So we've got two Thunder players, two role players that we like in the prop market. Let's head to the Indiana Pacers, and let's go to Obi Toppin. So Obi Toppin, points and rebounds is something that you targeted. What are you going to do, over or under Obi Toppin points and rebounds tonight?
over 10 and a half is just jumped out at me. Another one that just jumped right out at me here. The Thunder have allowed the third most shot attempts and six most points per game to bench players this postseason. Of course, that's partially because they've blown some teams out and therefore some reserves have been on the floor. But I think this sets up really well for Toppin. He's averaged 9 points and 4.7 rebounds in just 19 minutes per game against the Knicks in the last round here. He hit this combined number in four of the six games in that series and also posted 8.8 points and 3.3 boards per game in the second round series win over Cleveland. So he's been in this 15 to 20 minute role here, but he delivered 11 points and four rebounds in game five, 18 points and six rebounds in game six of the last series. He's heading into this contest with a lot of confidence here. And also in the most recent regular season outing against OKC, he had 12 points and three rebounds in 22 minutes, which is right along the lines of what we need to see here. You have to think of the opponent, Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, Isaiah Hartenstein. Toppin could really match up against any of these guys. He has the athleticism, he has the length, and if Indiana wants to keep up in transition, Toppin's probably a better fit to stay on the court than a guy like Miles Turner. So I think that we're going to see a really fast pace, that high scoring 230-ish total. I expect Toppin to get his usual 18 to 22, maybe pushing 25 minutes, which should give him more than enough opportunities to clear that.
All right, very good. Daniel Karpik with us. And again, we're breaking down game one of the NBA Finals, player props, and Benedict Mathurin of the Pacers is an interesting one to me, too. I looked at this as well. Mathurin could have 20 points one game for the next, but he's going to get some opportunities. He's probably going to get some minutes tonight. Are you going to play Mathurin over? The total is 7.5.
I got to do it. I'm going to go Mathurin over 7.5. He's done this in 9 of 15 playoff games, but most importantly, 9 of 12 to the over when logging double-digit minutes. So if you think of what OKC has been able to do against opposing starting lineups, I have the stats in front of me. Just 67.1 points per game, 13.2 assists, all postseason lows. They've forced 18 turnovers and have made life really tough on opposing teams. And just 9.3 fast break points. That's really, really difficult to kind of project this Indiana starting five to have a lot of success. And for a guy like Tyrese Halliburton or for Benedict Mathurin to really go off here. So who else to step up is better than Benedict Mathurin for this team? He's one of the few guys that can come in and create his own shot. He could score at all levels. And I really think that he's proven this in this playoffs. Like you just mentioned, there's a lot of volatility there, but he had 20 points in 12 minutes in game four against the Knicks, 23 points in 25 minutes in game five, 19 points in 20 minutes, 23 points in 27 minutes versus Cleveland, 13, 14, and 9 points against the Bucks, all in limited minutes. He's one of these guys that could really fill it up. And I just think that's just too low. If you want to find a prop to kind of ladder, if you're one of those people who likes to ladder props, I think that this scoring prop is the best one to ladder up to that 15, 18, 20-ish range if you want to go crazy.
I know Tim Murray was a fan of Ben Shepherd when he was a sharpshooter for the Belmont Bruins.
Oh, yeah.
Ben, I like this prop a lot, Dan. Ben Shepherd made three, so over a half. You know he's going to get a couple of open looks from the corner tonight, right?
Yeah, I have to think so. I mean, when you look at this OKC defense, there's so few holes. So I was really trying to crunch the numbers. I was looking at everything I could possibly get my hands on here. But the Thunder have shown a little bit of leakage from the perimeter, particularly in those corners, like you just mentioned. They've allowed 12.4 corner three-point attempts per game in the playoffs. That's the second most of any team. And now their opponents have only shot 31.2% on those shots. However, the Pacers have been lethal from those spots, shooting a playoff best 46.9%. So where does Shepherd come in? He's quietly carved out a role as that floor spacer, but he's averaged 1.2 corner three-point attempts per game this postseason. That doesn't jump out as crazy volume, but in two regular season games against OKC, he averaged three exactly corner attempts per game and knocked down three total threes, one of two and two for six from deep, playing 22 minutes in both of those games. And like I said, that blowout is in play. Coach Carlisle's going to rely on that depth and on his bench. And all we need is one. I like identifying these props where all we need is one, because say he comes in, shoots his first shot from the corner, we cash right away. There's nothing better than that. There's no better feeling. So I think he's going to see minutes against SGA, just like he did against Jalen Brunson, to give Aaron Nesmith some time off on the bench. I think his minutes are secure in that low teens to mid teens range. And I think that's more than enough to make one shot from deep.
He's Dan Karpuck at Daniel Karpuck, K-A-R-P-U-C, on social media. Read him over at vsin.com. A plethora of prop bets for game one tonight. Dan, appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Derek Stevens in studio with us next. It is VSIN Primetime.